Warning, do not listen to this podcast if hearing about freedom and liberty is not legal for you in your community. And if so, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, a weekly web lab where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi cover the punk rockinist, hip hopinist current events, as well as timeless universal truths about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because there's no such thing as half free. The Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com, the Liberty Radio Network, and No Agenda Global Radio.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Distance Learning Anarchy Series with Freedom Fiends Michael W. Dean.
Broadcasting from my windowless bunker.
And Nima Vadadi.
Go, go, Freedom Fiends!
Don't bless me. How are you doing, Nima?
I bless you, my son.
Yeah.
I'm good.
Yeah. This is enough. Just talk a little bit.
Okay. Talk. Configuration feedback. Current audio bit rate.
Hang on. Stop. Rolling. Nima?
Yeah.
Everything's trying to pod block us today. I keep doing one thing and then the phone rings and something else happens. How you doing, man?
I'm good. Are we rolling?
I want to say that we're being pod blocked.
We are. I had to take my shirt off. I put on long sleeves this morning because it was cool.
Wow.
I forgot that about Texas. In Texas, it'll be like cool in the morning to where you need something long. And then like after 2 hours, it's like sweaty and hot.
Speaking of things being hot in Texas, my boy Cody Wilson there got written up in the local news as, what's it say? Like, law student attacks heat over 3D gun design.
Oh, yeah, a track seat, yeah. Well, it wasn't the local news. I thought it was interesting because it was the campus news. It's the Daily Texan, which, you know, I sort of grew up around in college, at least. And I like the Daily Texan, and it was just fun to be on campus again, and the first thing I see is Cody Wilson sitting there with the Mosin. I was like, badass. He pulled out the Mosin.
I know I'm taking a lot of responsibility for his rise to infamy. Which, you know, he had it all in him. All I did was convinced him that interviews are good and coached him and was really patient with him, got him to do an interview. And he's like, I'm never going to do an interview. I don't do that. And now he's like Mr. Interview. I also told him to get a Mosin. He didn't have a Mosin at the time. I said, like, you need to get a Mosin.
Oh, really? Yeah. That's what I was wondering. I was kind of hoping in my heart of hearts that somehow the Fiends influenced his Mosin-ness. And I was like, nah, Mosin's just a popular gun and it's cheap and everybody has one.
I spread the Mosin virus.
Was that his first gun? Because I was also wondering, it seemed to me like, because the Daily Texan is written by journalism students, so it seemed to me like the photojournalist on that story was probably like, well, can you hold a gun, you know, for visual effect? And maybe he didn't have a handgun. Maybe he's just like, all I got's the Mosin.
When I talked to him, he wasn't really a gun guy. That's kind of a good thing. I mean,
it's a good thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's like, I mean, I look at the guy who, you know, paid for the Heller case. He'd never fired a gun in his life. Cody had fired a gun and he had a gun. I forget what it was. He did not have a handgun. I think he had an AK or an SKS.
Nice.
I think it was an AK. Yeah. But you know, he hadn't even really fired it much.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's good that he, you know, I guess he's kind of a gun guy. I mean, most people, you know, liberals would be like, he has an AK? How can you call him kind of a gun guy?
I know.
But yeah, that's a good thing because, you know, he's in it because of what the market wants. And he's in it to push the envelope of human achievement vis-a-vis 3D printing. And that makes it a really good, heartwarming story, a freedom fix, so to speak.
Yeah. I mean, I take this as it's not about guns, it's about freedom. And he picked the thing that made sense to rub the edges the wrong way with a lot of people. You know, I mean, I think that if we were in a Scott Beezer lib pair with guns, but for some reason, you know, adding a fuel injector to your car that improved your gas mileage was, you know, as regulated as guns, I think that's what he'd be 3D printing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, Yeah, I'm just waiting on somebody to 3D print me out a blunt or a joint or a bong or something.
Well, that is
I
one
guess
of
a
the
bong would be pretty easy to do, but
yeah, bong's a tube, man. You could do a tube, yeah, but yeah. That is one of the possible future applications of that is 3D printers is 3D printers for pharmaceuticals, which could be for drugs too. I mean, basically,
nice.
There's different ways it could be done. It could have, you know, a bunch of different petrochemicals that would mix when the prescription arrives via the internet, or, you know,
so
maybe,
it would 3D print down to the molecular level is what you're saying. Like it would create the chemicals in the printer.
Yeah, it'd be really easy to have something that would just mix chemicals. I mean, that could be done right now. But, you know, I've heard it discussed to the point of, like, you know, it'll have hydrogen, nitrogen, carbon, and oxygen and, like, build the molecules.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking.
With those four things, you can build pretty much most of the recreational drugs and most of the pharmaceutical drugs out there.
That would be amazing. That's what I'm crossing my fingers and waiting on. So the thing about Cody is in the Daily Texan write-up, it didn't seem like he's taken this sitting down. As we most of us know, his printer got taken away. And at the end of the story, it says he plans on getting a license and trying to lease a printer again. They didn't make it clear what they meant by license, though. I'm guessing FFL? Maybe an FFL. Yeah, that's the only thing I could think of. I mean, the FFL doesn't have anything to do with gun printing because gun printing is such a new concept.
I think it does. I think that, you know, an FFL is for selling guns, but I think also to do some home manufacturer guns, you'd need an FFL, or they would want you to need an FFL. The thing with his thing is, I heard an interview with him yesterday on some gun podcast. There's a lot of gray areas in what he's doing. He actually said...
That's kind of my point, yeah.
He actually said that he is... he's incorporating in Wyoming. I thought that was interesting. Which
is it because of the firearms?
I don't know, man.
Act?
It's hard to get a hold of him. I wrote him today and asked him for his address to send him the gun training DVD because I think he'd dig it and could use it. But Wyoming incorporation is pretty common. I mean, like, other states are really well known for it, like Delaware. But I think Wyoming is similar to Delaware in the laws with that, and people out of state incorporate here. But I think if I were him, I'd go live in Wyoming and do it. I'm not going to let him stay at my house and do this. I'll tell you that.
In Wyoming, he would be protected by the Firearms Freedom Act as long as he would have to buy the medium that the printer uses inside of Wyoming would be the only catch.
You know what he should do is he should go stay at Anthony Bichard's house and do this.
There you go.
Yeah.
Anthony protect him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. I mean, I was also thinking maybe...
That might be an unholy match made in somewhere in Wyoming. Anthony helped push through the Wyoming Firearm Freedom Act, and it's never been tested.
Never. It would be wonderful to see it tested on something with as huge of a repercussion as what Cody's doing.
I'm going to write Anthony right now. Anthony.
There you go. Make it happen. Make it so. The whole licensing thing to me, though, doesn't that just sum up what's wrong with a system that at this point, you know, Is it really there if we're not trying to do something mandated or regulated, it's just assumed that you're not allowed to do it? Because that's what the company was doing. You know, there's no law that says you have to have a license to print a gun or to use a 3D printer to do research, to do R&D on 3D gun printing. But they just assumed that it might be illegal and the company pulled it from them. I think some libertarian billionaires should just buy Cody a freaking printer so he doesn't have to worry about this and he can just own it outright.
I just wrote Anthony and sent him the link to this article and said you should have this guy, or what if you had this guy come live at your house and test the Wyoming Firearm Freedom Act?
You think he'd be down for that?
I don't know. I'm just being a punk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Anthony loves to do activism, and he loves to push the envelope. I don't know if this is his kind of a deal, but this seems like it'd be something that he would enjoy.
Yeah. So, moving right along to audio, we wanted to talk a little bit about Levelator. We did a cast recently where you weren't loud enough because you were worried about distorting, we'd had on the previous cast. So
it's like a pendulum.
I ended up with all these files where, like, I was about, you know, you were about a third as loud as me. So I ran them through the Levelator. The Levelator is a free downloadable It's a great program. It's how I like programs that do this. It only does one thing. It does it well. It doesn't have any controls or things on it. You just drop and drag a WAV file or AIFF file into it, and it levelates them. It brings the levels of the loud one down a little bit and the quiet ones up a little bit so they're more matched, and then outputs a new file. And I just took those files and then did my usual voodoo on them, and it worked pretty well.
Yeah, seemed to work really well. It's interesting because when you first posted blog about Levelator, I was like, when would you ever use that? Would you just get it right the first time?
Yeah.
And I guess that was that was the universe's way of letting me know, hey, this is when you would use it.
Yep. And let's see, I wrote to Daniel Nathan, the German man who created Butt.
Butt guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And asked him if he could add input levels. And he said implementing that wouldn't be a problem. The problem is more that Butt's development has stopped. Oh, his butt has stopped developing. And then he says, you use Windows, right? Maybe when having a good day in the near future, I'll implement it.
Maybe I'll implement it. Maybe I'll.
No, and then he has a smiley winky face, which says I think he will. Okay. And that's cool, man. It's like I like software developers that, you know, I mean, think about Microsoft or Apple. If you wanted a feature added, think about you'd have to get like 10,000 people to sign a petition, and then a year later they do it. But you know, I just email the guy. I bet if I emailed him and sent him $100, it'd be done tomorrow, but I don't have it, so.
Yeah.
Because the fiends aren't giving enough donations. We really need more fiend donations. We need fiend weekly, monthly subscriptions, even as little as $5 a month. And we really would like people to go on iTunes and review the Freedom Fiends and Anarchy Gumbo. And we'd love people to go on to Amazon and review Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle and Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom.
And you get something in return. We'll send you buttons if you become a monthly donator. And get a nice free set of Freedom Fiends buttons, which are awesome.
You should have buttons right now, today. They should be coming today.
All right. I haven't checked the mail today, but I will do that. Another thing you could do if you want to help the fiends out is go check Scott Beezer's Quantum Vibe comic.
He's awesome. I went through about
80
panels of it the other day.
Nice.
It's amazing.
Isn't it? What part are you at right now? Like, did she dive into the sun yet?
She just got back from the sun.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wasn't that awesome?
It was
diving
amazing.
Into the sun. Yeah. Had you ever even imagined that in your life?
I know. Yeah. In Lib Air. Yeah. It's like, you know, we're like, well, who would take care of the roads? And like, without the government, we'd be diving into the sun in private spaceships.
Yeah.
I still don't understand why she went and nuked the sun. What's the point of that?
It was from. It
sounds bad.
I think the way they explained it was she needed to take some kind of measurements that were relevant to her boss's research, because he's doing research on, other universes, other dimensions. And maybe I think that's where the title is kind of a double entendre. You know, quantum vibe, like not only the vibe, but like the vibration, quantum vibration, maybe has something to do with
that. Well, it's actually explained at some point. I saw the word the quantum. It's the research he's doing. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And so I think she had to like go into the sun, and she like dropped bombs into the sun or something and measured the explosion.
She dropped 10 nukes into the sun for the sun. This, which interesting in LibPair. I wonder like. Who would try to stop you from doing that? Because that's kind of, that could be, if it went awry, terrorism on a, you know, global, not beyond global level, you know? I mean, you talk about like, well, you know, with the Second Amendment, we should be able to have nukes. And it's like, what if you nuked the sun and put it out, you know?
I don't think you could put out the sun from nuking it. I mean, the sun is just one anyway.
I know. I mean, it looked like, you know, dropping pies in someone's field.
Yeah. Not a big deal.
And there were 10 nukes.
Yeah. But I'm pretty sure it was to, it had something to do with an experiment for her boss's research. So he can figure out how to even get away from the solar system, because apparently even that small amount of tyranny in the Quantum Vibe universe is too much.
So you're interviewing Scott Beezer, rhymes with geezer.
I'm excited.
This week. Yeah. Is that going to come out Saturday or the next Saturday? Do you know? Because I have a really hot tip coming up. I have an interview tomorrow that I may want to put out this Saturday. Would you mind?
Doesn't matter to me. It's up to you. Okay. I mean, I could go either way.
Let's see when is yours?
I'm doing the interview on Wednesday.
Okay, me too. So we'll talk Wednesday. What time are you doing it at?
2 p.m. Central Time.
I'm doing mine 2 p.m. my time. Oh, no, 3 p.m. Yeah, so around the same time. So when when we're done, we should chat. Okay. I'm interviewing Dick Dale. Now say, who's that, Michael?
He's got a cool name, but, you know, but I don't know who Dick Dale is. Is he a porn star?
Dick Dale kind of invented loud guitar, among other things. He invented surf music by taking Middle Eastern. He's Lebanese derivation, born in America. His dad was Lebanese, and he took Middle Eastern modes on the guitar and played them really loud, and it turned into surf music. You probably know a lot of his music. This is the one that was featured in
Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction.
Yep. Yep. Nice. Nice.
This song just kicks so much ass, man.
Now, did he also come up with the reverby, echoey sound that surf music guitar has?
Well, he helped Leo Fender build the first 100-watt amp. You know, he's known as the king of surf, but he calls himself the king of loud. He was the first guy to play electric guitar really effing loud and with energy. And he actually influenced, like, punk rock, metal, shred guitar. I mean, East Bay Ray from Dead Kennedys plays just like Dick Dale. I mean, he plays very similar music.
Now, you know, he's Lebanese. Okay. See, I always wondered that. To me, there was always a connection in my head between surf music and actually coastal Iranian violin. It's not a violin. It's some kind of string instrument they play with a bow.
It's the
Ord or something.
No, not the Ord. This song that he's best known for, Mizerlou, he didn't actually write. It's a slow, like, it's a Greek song, and it's slow and kind of thoughtful, and he just like sped it way up.
It's called Miserloo. Okay. Yeah. Ben Folds actually on his live
everyone
album,
covers
Ben Folds
it.
Has a cover of it. That's really awesome.
Yeah.
On piano.
But he's a really interesting cat. He's 75 years old. He still tours like 100 dates a year.
Wow.
He's really energetic. He survived cancer. There's actually this thing in a Jimi Hendrix song where Jimi Hendrix kind of mumbles under his breath, you'll never hear surf music again. And a lot of people took that as a diss of surf music, like Jimi Hendrix was saying, I'm here now, surf music's out. Uh-huh. But it wasn't. It was reverential to Dick Dale, because Dick Dale was dying of cancer at the time and survived it. And, you know, that was the 60s.
And outlived Jimi Hendrix.
Oh, by far.
By
Dick Dale not only doesn't do drugs or drink, he's anti-drugs and drink. I'm going to ask him about that. It's going to be interesting because...
Like anti for himself in a straight edge way, or like anti, I don't want you people.
I think it might be the other. I don't know. He's going to be the first guy ever interviewed on Anarchy Gumbo who I don't think is even a minarchist. He's my friend who introduced me to him, mutual friend of ours, Bruce Boel, who used to play drums in my band in San Francisco and runs a pizza shop in the same town in Southern California where Dick Dale lives. And Dick Dale comes in all the time and gets the organic something pizza. So they know each other. He gave me his phone number. Bruce said Dick has like old hippie politics, which I don't know what that means, but I'm going to ask him. It's mainly going to be about music. I'm sick of interviewing computer programmers, and I really like Dick Dale. So I'm going to interview him. But he actually... he did things that were kind of straight edge in a way. Interesting. You know, maybe he invented punk rock, metal, and straight edge. It kind of sounds like. Because in the 60s, I mean, Miserloo's from like 1963. I mean, he was playing hard edge music, inventing it back then. But what he used to do in the 60s was he would rent a ballroom and put on shows and pack out a 2,000-seat ballroom with a dress code and with alcohol banned, which was unheard of at the time. A friend of a friend of mine opened up for him, and Dick Dale came backstage and yelled at them for smoking pot in their dressing room, which, I don't know. Does that mean he's
so
straight
the guy who invented surf music is a buzzkill?
Really? Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess you could say if it's his show, he has control of what's going on, so it's his property for the night. But... I don't know. I don't know if he wants to outlaw it or what. I mean, he survived cancer. I'm going to talk to him about, you know, my daughter having cancer and how pot helped her. But I don't know. I don't want to get in an argument with Dick Dale.
This could be a really interesting interview. Yeah, because not only
really
is Dick Dale, but yeah, this is the first time where he could have the complete opposite politics of you.
Well,
and
I don't want to argue with the guy, man. I have too much respect for him.
Maybe you'll teach him something.
That's pretty haughty of me to think, but it crossed my mind. But no, I'm gonna just see how it goes and talk. I really want to talk about music with him a lot because, I mean, you listen to Dead Kennedys and it's like Dead Kennedys' guitar style really sounds a lot mm-hmm. like Dick Dale. Mm-hmm. And East Bay Ray has said in interviews, you know, that he's
Ask him what he thinks of modern dubstep sounds, you know, like really loud, super almost grating synthesizer and bass sounds that almost sound cacophonic or do sound cacophonic, really loud and obnoxious.
Cacophonic. Yeah. I believe it is.
You can call it cacophonic if you want.
You and your words, you and your reinvention. Okay, here's Dead Kennedys. This sounds like fucking Dick Dale. Listen. You know, it's that single note, high reverb, powerful, kind of like playing horn lines on guitar. I mean, before Dick Dale, I mean, there were guitarists who played single note stuff like Les Paul, but he was playing like, you know, herky jerky jazz music, like do 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 do. But before this, like, the role of the guitar was kind of to play chords behind the singer, and people played through like, you know, 8-watt amps, and he got together with Leo Fender and got the, you know, 100-watt hurt your ears, make them bleed amp and turned it up to 11 and played as
hard
as he could.
So you're saying he sort of made the guitar part of the main event.
He made the guitar the main event. Yeah.
And his
current drummer is his son, and his son is like, you know, 23 or 24, I think. I have this image of like Dick Dale with his baby son, like holding his arms with drumsticks in him, teaching him surf music as a baby. Like, you will be my drummer if you want.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that should be awesome, man. I look forward to that.
Yep. So it's going to be a good week for the Gumbos.
Yeah, good couple weeks for the Gumbo.
So we got
artists this time, not necessarily just interviews about politics or even technology this time, but art, the essence.
So back to audio. I want to explain the Alex Jones interruption on our Sunday show.
Ah, yeah.
Hang on a sec. Let's go sell some things.
A science fiction comic adventure from Big Head Press. Quantum Vibe. It's year 2523. There are colonies on Venus, Mars, and Mercury. People travel in bubbles, fly at hyperspeed, with brain implants and artificial gravity. A scientific genius and his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system on a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. Quantum Vibe. There's a robot girl and zany creatures made with genetically engineered features, and corporate villains crave the opportunity to steal a profit from mother's ingenuity. A scientific genius and his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system on a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. QuantumVibe.com.
Hi, I'm Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, and like you, I'm concerned with privacy on the internet. The electronic police state is strangling our previous protections, and the central scrutinizer is trying to squint into all areas of our lives. That's why smart people surf the net with a VPN or virtual private network. I use a VPN from Bola VPN. Bola VPN has your utmost security in mind and will allow you to surf, email, and do other computing tasks without leaving a trail of breadcrumbs across the internet. Unlike many other VPN providers, Bola VPN doesn't log traffic. With Bola VPN, you can change your apparent location or disappear completely. Bola VPN has been around since 2007, which is OG in the VPN world. Bola VPN is easy to install and configure. Best of all, it can be had for less than 25 cents a day, which is a small price to pay for this much security. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them through the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
At the end of our Sunday show last week, today is October 9th, by the way, so this was October 7th. At the end of the show, Alex Jones's show interrupted our show, and we started yelling at him. And some people wrote me and they thought like that was just something we staged and played a recording of it, because the beginning of that episode.
Why would we do that?
The beginning of that episode, I was interviewed on Emberly's show, Voluntary Values, at the end of her show, right before our show. And we set it up ahead of time. I did it as a joke where they started talking about my new DVD and I came in and said, this is the Central Scrutinizer. I can't do it right now. But, you know, and so people heard us being interrupted by Alex Jones at the end. And this is the Central Scrutinizer. And people thought, oh, that they're just bookending their show with interruptions. This is kind of funny. It was not. It was real. What it was I mumbled into their show in the LRN mumble instead of calling in or doing it by Skype. And Ian set that up. And then Ian left the studio because he's not on Free Talk Live on Sundays. So he told them, he forgot to tell them to turn that channel off when their show was done. So it was open during our whole show. And they're on the GNC network. Free Talk Live is on the GNC network, and so is Alex Jones. And there was some crossed wire at GNC. Mm-hmm. And like Alex Jones's show started playing over our show the last 2 minutes of our show. Now, I've heard things like that happen before with Free Talk Live, where like, you know, you'll get something from GNC interrupting them. And that's what happened with us. And I didn't know what it was. And I started screaming at Alex Jones and calling him a fat little piggy constitution humper.
Cartman wannabe.
Yeah. And you didn't hear it because you'd muted that channel. Then you unmuted it and you heard it. Have you gone back and listened to the whole thing?
I did. Yeah. I went back and listened to it. It was pretty funny. But yeah, I mean, I was worried about that extra channel at the beginning. Like when I first got on, I was like, there's an extra channel here.
I said, don't worry about it, man. Don't worry about it.
Yeah,
Let's go.
Yeah. But I'm just glad that that was the only problem with it, was at the last, you know, 2 or 3 minutes, it was Alex Jones coming on, because at least we got some humor out of it. You know, wouldn't it have been awful if somehow that crosswire was playing over the channel the whole time? I don't know what we would have done.
I think it'd be cool if we were playing over Alex Jones's show the whole time and didn't know.
I think we'd know by now. We'll do it in reverse.
I think there's still a few stragglers who listen to both who haven't progressed in their journey from Alex Jones to the Freedom Fiends. They're still caught in the middle, stuck in the middle with you.
I guess Alex has his
clowns to the left of me,
then.
Jokers to the right.
Alex Jonesers to the right.
Speaking of Pulp Fiction or Reservoir Dogs.
I can't listen to him for too long, or I don't know. I just feel depressed, I guess.
You were going to say dirty, but no, depressed.
I was going to say dirty, but yeah, I think depressed is it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what a lot of people say they like about the Fiends, is we're not like a lot of other liberty type media where it scares you.
Right, right. And one of the reasons I left the mainstream media is because of the way we tended to sensationalize everything. We were selling fear, and that's sort of what Alex Jones does too. I don't want to sell fear because I don't think fear should be the motivator.
Here's what I think. I think fear shouldn't be collective. And you know, in my new DVD, Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, which you can order from me or on Amazon, we talk about the Cooper color codes, which are training for individual self-defense of like alertness stages. You know, white is oblivious, yellow is calm but looking around. Orange is possible threat, you know, and then it goes up from there to like in a fight. The Department of Homeland Security took that and perverted it into the what is it called?
The threat level.
The threat level. Yeah. Like they did a sickening thing with something that's helpful and individual and collectivized it to where the whole country should be at orange, at red today because of something we can't tell you about.
Yeah, yeah, and the media just pick up on it. Like, I think right after they did that, like, the news stations would actually give updates, you know, today the terror level is orange. I think now you only really hear it and see it at airports. They'll still mention it at airports, which is...
And on American Dad. American Dad, I think...
does he?
What's his name? Not Steve Smith, his dad. What's the dad?
Stan.
Stan Smith still has the little threat level indicator on the refrigerator with the arrow you can move over.
If the government had their way, we would all have it on a refrigerator, you know, like a thermometer. It'd be like mandatory.
You know, I remember when it came out, John Stewart joking about it. He said, you know, and this, and it says that it took them 8 months to come up with this. And he's like, what? Did they have a font issue? 8 months?
8 months.
Yeah.
It takes them to do things.
It looks
man.
Like something that a kindergarten teacher would come up with.
Yeah. Yeah. utterly ridiculous. And they never explain what they base the information on. And
How
you should respond. And I don't think it has it ever changed. I feel like it's been orange ever since. Like, what's the point of having a scale if it's never going to change? It's
Alex Jones. Alex Jones existed. Is always at like dark purple, I think.
Dark purple. He's at black.
Yeah.
Or plaid. Plaid.
The Homeland Security Advisory System. Okay, it's low, which is green. Guarded, which is blue, yellow, which is elevated, high, which is orange, and severe, which is red. I think Alex Jones lives between high and severe.
Yeah.
And I think he collectivizes fear, you know, which I really should be an individual thing that you decide whether you need to have it or not.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's being phased out. They started phasing it out January 27th, 2011, but it's not completely phased out yet.
I guess not. I guess I have noticed it less, but I didn't know if that was just me paying less attention or what. But
the threat levels low risk and general risk have never been used.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's always been
elevated, high, or severe.
Yeah. Well, the thing about fear, you know, is it's not empowering. It's the opposite of empowering. And I feel like at The Fiends, we want you to be empowered. We want you to feel confident and feel like... You shouldn't be afraid of no government.
I think we should create our own. It's like how the level that you should be laughing at governments.
There you go.
You know, low, guarded, elevated, high, severe.
Yeah. Yeah. Red, blushing.
Yeah.
At the government's embarrassment to society.
So I want to move into talking about the title for this cast is either one of two things. It's either It's Not My Fault, A Lot of People Are Wrong, or I'm So Sick of Cyber Begging Voluntarists. Now, the first one, It's Not My Fault, A Lot of People Are Wrong, came from somebody said on Facebook, Michael Dean, you have beef with so many people, I can't even keep up with it. And I said, It's not my fault, a lot of people are wrong. And that's in general of all the things I have beef with people about. But in specific...
We've taken beef to a different level. When we say... The beef you have isn't like, you know, I hate somebody because they're gay.
It's not a knife fight in the club bathroom after the rap battle.
It's you have a disagreement with something they're saying and you're making an argument against that, not necessarily them as a person.
Which, you know, is not to imply I'm perfect. Like, you know, when I was a little kid, when I was like five, I used to joke to my mother, I'm perfect. And she'd grab my hand and she'd look and say, I don't see any holes in your hand, which was her saying, like, only Jesus is perfect. You're not perfect. It was kind of funny. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know I'm not perfect and I'm open to critique. You know, recently somebody posted a great comment that I left up on YouTube of the Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. It was that one. Somebody said... everyone should watch this movie, even though the director is an asshole. And, you know, I want to be based on my output, and I don't care if I'm perceived as an asshole, because at the end of the day, it's like you're only as good as your last show. That's what the Rolling Stones used to say. I think the Grateful Dead, too. So I want to be as good as our last show. So this is going to be a good show. But cyber begging voluntarists. Now, I've seen a lot of this. And I've talked to a lot of people about it. And, okay, to me, voluntarism, I'm not a voluntarist because I begrudgingly do pay taxes. Voluntarism, I guess, is working without the system, outside the system. And it's a strategy to try to collapse the government by not financing it. And I guess people think that, you know, if 1% of 1% of 1% of people don't pay taxes and talk about it on the internet, the military-industrial complex and the government will collapse, which... it's far-fetched, but it's a start, I guess. But
it is a start.
It's not my strategy. And
if everybody did that, or if a much larger percentage did that.
Yeah. I mean, it's the only way.
I don't even know if it would have to be a majority, but you know, a nice level, a bigger number than
1%. Well, they'd clamp down hard on a few people and try to have a chilling effect. I think they already are. But
yeah.
And, you know, like Mark Edge said, you can't really be a voluntarist and an activist. You should be one or the other. It's not prudent to... be a I don't pay taxes person who's bragging on the internet. I don't pay taxes, you know.
right.
And to be specific,
like a gangster never really says that they're gangster.
Yeah,
they don't want people to know.
Or like the
doing.
Hell's Angels used to say, you know, those who say they aren't, those who say they are aren't, and those who are say something to the effect of like, you know, are you a 1%er biker? If you say you are, you probably aren't, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like,
Or the first rule of Fight Club is don't talk about Fight Club.
Yeah. Yeah. And to be specific, voluntarism is, I think, often confused as a political outlook like libertarianism, but it's not necessarily, it's more of a strategy. And you
are
could
you
actually
about agorism. I'm confused here because I always heard you talk about agorism that way.
Yeah. I'm getting it mixed up, and everyone's going to go like, "Who is this amateur?" But it's a guy who hasn't had his coffee yet, enough coffee. So, yeah, okay, agorism. Agorism, voluntarism, and libertarianism are slightly different things, but could work in this title. I'm so sick of cyber begging blank. I guess I was on voluntarism because the example we're going to pick on is a guy. We're not going to name him because I don't want to. There's so many people doing this that I don't want to bash one person by name. But there's a guy who's doing a voluntarist superhero comic, and he's begging for money on Indiegogo, who I wouldn't deal with because they shut down, you know,
our friend
Cody Wilson's donations. But, you know, they raised about $1,000 so far, and good for them. My main problem with them and with a lot of people, well, there's a few main problems. One is he said something like in his pitch, this lives and dies with you. Like, in other words, kind of guilting you, like, this ain't going to happen if you don't give me money, which I think is bad form. Because I've accepted donations for almost everything I've done, including the Freedom Fiends, but I've never said to somebody, this isn't going to happen if you don't give me money.
You don't hold it hostage.
Right. And our expenses are about $40 a month right now, and they're about covered. But if they weren't, I'd pay them out of pocket. But I've got money now, and I'm doing well, or fairly well, kind of well. But even when I was starving and living in a piss-in-the-sink, you know, rat hole, making DIY or Die, the movie, and traveling around Europe and getting money to do it, you know, and part of the money was from selling things, not from begging. But even some of it was from, you know, applying for grants from individual organizations, not governments. And I made it happen. And I never said to anybody, this ain't going to happen if you don't give me money. I never held it hostage like that. My second problem with all of this is I believe it kind of goes back to the AA thing. There's one of the traditions in AA is we are self-supporting through our own contributions, which is why AA, they pass a hat at the meeting. And I think that's a good model, you know, because basically the reason they do it, and they say this in the book, The 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, they explain it. So people are really used to alcoholics always asking for a handout. So that what they feel like is once you get panhandling or begging their family or stealing or, you know, not paying the rent or whatever to get alcohol, that once you're sober, they feel like you need to change that perception. And you don't change that perception by telling people, I'm a recovering alcoholic, or I'm a voluntarist, or
I won't drink unless you give me money.
That's a good point. Or I'm an agorist. You know, you don't tell them you're sober, you show them you're sober. And, you know, in AA, there's a lot of, there used to be a lot of value put on, like, you know, you get a job, you don't beg anymore. I think now is with the tainting from the recovery industrial welfare complex, I think there's a lot of like, no, you get sober and then you get on disability, which a lot of people I knew in San Francisco are still doing. But,
well, okay, so what if somebody came back at you and said, well, Michael, this is just a modern way to get investors easily if you don't know a lot about business and can't go and market this to venture capitalists and find people to invest in it or go public on the stock market like companies do. This is just a simple way for people to show their idea to investors and say, hey, would you like to be a part of this project? Playing devil's advocate here, Michael.
Okay, you're right. I would co-sign that more if people removed any of this lives and dies with you, which kind of reminds me of what Stephen King did. Stephen King, when his publicist said, there's this thing called the internet, Stephen, you should embrace it. What they came up with was he wrote a book that was internet only and released like 3 chapters of it free and then said, you need to give me donations and then I'll write each chapter. And Stephen King has a lot of fans, and some people did it. And every chapter he had to get a certain amount of donations for, but it kind of tapered off, and he never wrote the last third of the book, and people were really pissed because they'd already made all their donations and never got the rest of the book. People called it hostageware.
Right.
And he eventually, right, like 10 years later, put the book out in paperback form, and it's one of his lowest liked books. It's not a great book. And also, like, everyone who'd already paid the donations for 2/3 of it had to pay the full price.
They still had to buy the book.
And I want you to ask Scott Beezer about that too, because he's a writer, okay, and you know, all writers kind of have an opinion of Stephen King, usually good, well, even if they don't like him.
I think you're right that the distasteful thing about cyberbegging is when people threaten to not do the project, because I feel like if you're saying that, what you're saying is I'm not as passionate as this project as I am about getting donations to do the project.
I mean, I sold guns to finance Guns and Weed the Road to Freedom.
Right. If you really are passionate about the project, you're going to make it happen, even if that means you have to work nights and not see your wife.
Yeah. I mean, I wrote my first novel working a day job and then coming home at night and working 8 hours a day in an office and then working 8 hours a day at night. A lot of really influential people did. I mean, you know, not to compare me to him, but Hemingway, you know, he's a war correspondent. Hemingway went and got shot at and wrote about it for newspapers. You know, that's a lot less pussy than, please give me money or this won't happen.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess... I felt the same distaste for this kind of cyberbegging because of that. But I think putting a blanket statement on it like it's all wrong, I think maybe it has its place and it can be part of a pronged approach. You know, there are other examples.
I will never, ever.
That's fine.
Set up an account on Indiegogo.
The Gray State folks, and you mentioned this too. The Gray State folks are asking for donations.
There's a few exceptions.
They've done work.
They've done something fucking amazing on their own before they even started asking for donations. Mm-hmm. The thing that they did, that trailer that they did on their own, is better than most full projects done by people after cyberbegging for a year. And they did that on their own. So I like them. I won't even say I'll cut them a break. I'll say I like what they did. There's three people I like who do this. They're one. Kofi is one. Kofi lives in a country where the average person working a full-time job makes $1,200 US a year. And he's like spreading libertarianism in a country that's headed socialism like a speeding freight train. Mm-hmm. And
donating to Kofi is voluntary as foreign aid.
It really, exactly. Yeah. And he ended up with hepatitis from and couldn't afford $80 worth of medicine to save his life. He finally got it after months of help trying to get help. I've helped Kofi. I help pimp Kofi whenever he does anything. And Kofi's the man. The third person who I co-sign with this is Cody Wilson, because Cody Wilson is doing something that's going to change the effing world. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's a lot more important than check out this comic or, you know, I'm making a documentary about the Libertarian Party in Beast Lick, Wyoming. No. You know, and we didn't ask for donations to make our movies, man. I mean, we just learned how to make movies really cheap.
Just
we
did them.
We made Guns and Weed my first movie, DIY or Die, cost about $8,000 to make. And I did get a $5,000 donation for tax. You know, basically, I got a tax-free status through an umbrella organization, through an arts organization who co-sponsored it. I forget. And they take like 10%. A lot of arts organizations do that. And I wrote proposals and went to the, went in San Francisco to the, Foundation Center. I've talked about them before, and sent out like 100 packets on my own dime and got like a few donations of $50 and $100 and got one for $5,000 and, you know, used it to make the movie. I would have made the movie anyway. And I was making it before that. The Hubert Selby Jr. It'll Be Better Tomorrow movie cost about $25,000 to make. And some of it came, a little bit of it came from donations. A lot of it came out of my pocket, and I was starving because of it for 2 years making that movie. I made it back and then like a little bit more. I mean, I made about 8 cents an hour for the 3 years I worked on that movie.
But it's the passion that really made the project. And if you're saying something like, well, this lives or dies with whether or not you give me money, that doesn't really bode well.
I'd say you're not really an artist.
Right.
I really would.
Because if you really were an artist, you would be doing the project because you want to see it exist.
Artists make art, man. Artists make art.
You want to make the art. You don't.
Yeah.
And if you couldn't raise the money to pay, you know, the help you need, you would find somebody to do it for free or to do it for beer or to do it for some kind of trade. You would figure out a way to make it happen.
And anybody that wants to know how to do that should go read my book, $30 Film School, even if they're not a filmmaker, because there's a lot in there about motivating people. I mean, I've been criticized heavily by idiots on Amazon saying, like, this book tells you how to scam people into working for free. No, it tells you how to get people to be involved in a project and want to be involved in a project, and it's win-win and everyone feels good about it when they're mm-hmm. done, you know, for something where there's no money. I mean, DIY or Die, there's a couple people on there that were film students. The way I found the cameraman for that was I walked around the corner, you know, I walked like a few blocks up the street from my house in San Francisco and listened to art students standing out smoking cigarettes in front of the art school and listened to who was talking about filmmaking and talked them up mm-hmm. and said, I'm making this movie. I don't have a camera, but do you want to be a cameraman on it? And they're like, okay.
Yeah.
And some of those people, if you go on IMDb, their only credit.
They use it on their reel?
Oh, their only credit is my movie 10 years later.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, and that's before Craigslist. I mean, there's so many ways to do that kind of stuff now. And, you know, when it comes to art, you know, a lot of times it's how it works as a whole rather than how one specific thing works. Like if it's a comic, I don't care if it's not drawn as amazingly as, you know, the current
Dale,
Marvel
in
or
Anarchy,
DC universe.
Anarchy in Your Head, Dale's stuff is drawn really pretty poorly. And I'll say that outright. It's one of my favorite comics in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, because it works. It works.
And there's stick figure stuff. You know, with a good story, stick figure stuff works. Yeah. And I would say, you know, do stick figure stuff that has the story and then free source it and let other people draw it
for
you.
And when you free source it, it could be a number of things. It could be fellow travelers, voluntarists who can draw all right and have a passion for it and want to work on your project, and that'd be fine. Or you could do what you did with your movie. You know, go find actual artists who are looking for work for their portfolios, and you can do that on Craigslist too.
Well, Craigslist did exist when I was making DIY or Die, and I used it heavily. Yeah.
But here in Austin, I go through, you know, the artistic TV editing, music stuff all the time. And more than half of it is people saying, hey, I've got this project I'm passionate about. I can't afford to pay you anything, but you can put this clip on your reel, or you'll have experience, or you'll meet people.
And or you'll get laid. A lot of people got laid working on my projects.
Or you'll get free lunch. And there's tons of stuff. Tons of people out there that are just starting out or are learning or are trying something new. And they'd be more than willing to help you with projects like this. So there's more than one way to skin a cat. You don't have to raise a certain amount of money to pay your favorite artist or the most professional artist in the world to do your work.
A big piece of advice I have when getting people to work free, you mentioned free lunch, is always feed them and always buy them beer, even if it comes out of your pocket. There's nothing worse than showing up and working 7 or 8 or 10 hours free on someone else's
starving.
Project and starving. Yeah,
right. For your art. Don't make your helpers starve.
Yeah,
for your art.
And at the end of the day, buy them beer. Don't buy them beer during the day. All right, and on that, we're going to go sell some stuff.
All right.
Ugh, I'm so sick of looking at Steve's wedding pics, and I'm all out of passive-aggressive comments. What else am I supposed to do at work all day?
Sick of stalking your ex on Facebook?
Yeah!
Are you all out of cute cats and autocorrect mishaps to lolat?
Duh!
Freedom Fiends to the rescue! The Fiends now have a blog. Read all about the latest tyranny today. Dream about lip pair. Laugh while Western civilization collapses. Just click on the cat icon to the right of freedomfiends.com. Freedom Fiends blog. Read it!
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. We have Freedom Fiends, Anarchy Gumbo, and two designs for Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $6 for 4 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
Want to contribute to liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes. Follow twitter.com/fiendtorrents to grab the past episodes and new ones as they post. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents, while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding the Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down. That's twitter.com/fiendtorrents.
Yeah. So back to why we hate cyberbegging voluntarists, anarchists, libertarians, and agorists.
I don't hate them. I'm more ambivalent than you about this. You may hate them.
I don't hate them. I just am really, I find it really distasteful, especially agorists, because agorism is supposed to be the underground economy where you do it right without government intrusion. And if you're saying you're an agorist and you're begging for money, I mean, it's one thing to like crash on a friend's floor and let him buy you dinner when you're traveling and doing stuff. But another thing to like make it your business plan. And there are people doing this.
Up a deeper question though. What's the difference between an investor and a donor? What do you think that is?
Interesting, because I was looking at Adam Kokesh's website and his donation page is speciously marked invest, which I think he should really look at, because I think you could get in legal trouble for that.
Investment means you get some kind of return back that's previously agreed upon.
And there's nothing really shown as something you get back. I mean, I think you get a t-shirt if you donate a certain amount, but it's something like, it's more like you're investing and what you get back is helping Adam Kokesh be on the air, which...
And that can be valid as long as it's made explicit.
And it's really not. You know, I mean, I got a compliment on you on this. Nikki Darling, who is also disgusted with all this as I am, said, and props to Nima for delivering pizza instead of virtually panhandling.
Yeah, man, I need gear and got to go get that gear. So I got to get the money.
I know. And we do ask for donations, but there's never going to be a thing unless we're completely joking of, you know, this lives and dies without you. I mean, we'll donate and we say over the top things like, your life will be spared if you donate when we are libertarian tyrants of the world. And if anyone believes we're serious about that, we're not going to spare your life. We're joking. I mean, no, I'm kidding.
It's a dream to be able to make, all the money we need and more doing Liberty Media. And that's what we're working towards. But I think the way you work towards that is you consistently put out product. And that helps not only with, you know, building followers, but it also helps you hone your craft, right? If you do a million, if you put 100,000 hours or 10,000 hours in for free, eventually you'll be an expert at it and people will want to pay you.
Yeah. And even after you're an expert, you know, when there's a new thing, like for instance, I'm an expert at audio and podcasting. I've been doing it since 2006. I'm really good at it. And the stuff we do is some of the best stuff out there, quality wise, not just the audio, but the content, according to a lot of people. I started the Anarchy Gumbo podcast many months ago. I haven't put ads on it at all. I haven't tried to sell ads on it.
It helps the fiends though. It brings people to the fiends. It brings new audience members.
Yeah. But can you imagine?
It's a diversity thing too.
I mean, you know, the guy doing this cartoonist thing and a lot of other people doing the same thing don't have an audience yet. And they're saying, we need money to do this for something that doesn't cost money to do, which you could get people to do and be a team leader and herd cats. He's trying to raise money to pay for it. And God knows what else he's going to do with the money. But I mean, I'm not saying
it costs something to do the work, but you don't have to fund that with Federal Reserve notes or even silver.
Yeah.
You can fund it with volunteer work. People can volunteer their time and effort.
You know, can you imagine if like, you know, we'd been doing the fiends for over a year. And then all of a sudden I said, I'm going to start an interview show called Anarchy Gumbo, but I need I need $1,000 in donations before I'm even going to do my first interview.
Well, why have the middleman, right? I mean, if you need money to pay people to do your work, and you're asking and begging for people to give you the money so you can pay the people to do work, how about just cut out the middleman and beg the people to do the work? You'd ask people to donate their efforts instead of donate their money so you can pay.
I mean, money didn't even enter into Anarchy Gumbo. What happened was, it was the middle of the night. I was bored and restless. I called Ben Stone at 3:30 in the morning, my time. He was just getting up because he's, you know, he's Amish and has to get up and milk the cows. and I was like, hey, I think I want to start a new podcast. Can I interview you tonight? And he's like, okay. And I said, let's do a double ender. And he's like, what's that? And I explained it to him. And I said, wait, why don't you go like have your coffee and wake up and I'm going to go build the website. So I went and like, you know, spent an hour building the website for Anarchy Gumbo and writing the description of it and setting up the website, and then called him back and interviewed him. And that was how it started. Yep. There was no like, this won't happen no one gives me money.
Yeah,
I should have charged him.
Or the Freedom Fiends blog. I pitched it to you one Saturday.
And I said, like, no.
And I pitched it again. And I pitched it again. And you're like, all right, cool. It's a good idea. I'm convinced. And the website was done in a few hours.
Because I
then,
did
and
it.
Then, and then by the next day, you had emailed a bunch of people, and they volunteered their time to write guest posts.
And I think it's almost
this giant collaborative effort, and it got done just like that.
I think it's almost more popular than the Fiends podcast at this point. It's getting there.
Well, as far as like page views, but that's because I think people listen to us through podcatchers and iTunes and Stitcher more than, you know.
You know what else I hate? You know what else I hate?
What?
Is people who do activism knowing they could probably get arrested and then beg for bail.
Yeah, you think they should set that bail aside?
Yeah. And
like,
Ian,
like Common says, money becomes bail.
Ian has set up a thing for that, which I dig too, but I just think like I've seen people do it and get arrested and then like hammer their friends like, you know, I live and die in jail without you kind of thing.
It's your fault you're in jail. Well, not your fault, but you knew. You went into it knowing that that was a risk.
Yeah. The only person I've ever
chipped. You should have hedged your risks on that and had some money saved up for bail.
Yeah, which is how they did in the 60s. They had bail funds set up. But and it's what Ian's doing. And the only person I've chipped in or we've chipped in for bail was Jillian, but she wasn't doing activism. She was just living her life, you know, and that's an extraordinary circumstance.
She was just taking a road trip, man, daily business and stuff. The things people do in the summertime, drive across the country. I mean, she got knocked for going about her daily life.
Yeah, I guess my bottom line with this, and, you know, it sounds cheesy like shuck my books, but you know, you can download them if you don't want to buy them. Download $30 film school, $30 music school, $30 writing school, or get them.
It was kind of funny looking at the thread between you and one of these voluntarious beggars.
Oh,
you're
I
like,
told
you're
him
like, stop begging for money. Buy my book.
No. I was like, stop begging for money and go on YouTube and watch my
you were
movie.
Like, watch it for free. Yeah.
DIY or Die, How to Survive as an Independent Artist, which is, you know, actually like there was somebody who at one point said that they should take my $30 film school, $30 writing school, and $30 music school and bundle it for sale with the DVD of DIY or Die, How to Survive as an Independent Artist and call it $99 art school.
Nice. That's a really good idea. Somebody
yeah.
should do that.
I couldn't get my publisher to do it. I mean, my publisher yeah. on those books are it's Cienage. There's so many, like, they've changed the name of the company and sold to the Arabs like 8 times since I started writing for them. I still get checks.
Lousy
but,
Arabs.
Well, to an Arab company. But that company, it's Thompson Publishing. They're one of the biggest textbook publishers in America, or the biggest. Yeah. They also, if you go to Cop Lock, they have lots of ads on, I mean, not Cop Lock, Police One, the anti-Cop Lock, the Cops Are Great site run by cops.
Yeah.
There's lots of ads on there for a really expensive software program that you, if you're a cop, you buy with taxpayer money, made by that company, Thompson, that is for combing through social media to look for illegal activity.
Ugh.
I'm never going to work for them again. I'll still cash their checks because, hey, I did the work and they changed. I didn't change, you know?
Yeah.
So
but,
I'll still
cash
them.
You should stop playing in that band.
I've quit that band. Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
So my whole final thing is like, you know, being a team leader for artists is like herding cats. And I've written books and done movies on how to herd those cats. But it's like, as time has gone by, my projects have involved fewer and fewer humans, mostly just Nima. Because he's the one guy that, you know, doesn't make me cry from working with him. Although
I'm the one guy that you can yell at and I'll be like, yes, cool, man. Okay, I'll do whatever. You can yell at me and I'm like, all right, man, whatever.
I know. Do we have like some weird, like subtle S&M kind of relationship? I don't know. I hope not.
No, it's just that I'm really laid back, so we mesh well together.
Yeah.
Because you're really the opposite of laid back.
I do motivate you, but like you know, you can, even when you're not in the same room with me, you can see the vein pulsing in my forehead when I'm motivating you.
Yeah,
it's not good for me. And you know, I'm going to die at 62 of a heart attack, and then you'll be stuck to carry on our work.
Yeah, I'm going to have another round of kids when I'm 95.
I know. You'll be like, Michael should have smoked pot. I told him. So, you know, but learning that motivating artists and being a team leader is something, is like herding cats, is something you have to find out from experience. It's also why I've made myself a jack of all trades. It's like on my first two movies, I paid an editor. I didn't like having to, it wasn't the paying him, it was the having to like work on their schedule and like, you know, have discussions with them. And like, so I just learned to edit. I learned to edit with you on the Guns and Weed movie. And my latest movie, which had a budget of $206, I did all the editing on. And it's probably, technically, it's probably the best movie I've ever done. And interestingly, when I posted it on IMDb, I filled out all the stuff. It's really complicated to get something on IMDb, and I've done it, you know, for five movies now. When I did it, it got a, you know, like certain things are, will be rejected and you have to fix them.
Oh, the budget?
Yeah, the budget. Like, I got this autoresponder back thing that said, $206 seems too low. Are you sure that's the budget?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, it obviously cost you more in time than that, so...
Oh, yeah.
But it didn't cost you that much in actual...
It didn't cost me that much in time either, because I've gotten really good with my time. I mean, we spent a year and a half, really, on Guns and Weed. I spent 3 weeks of planning on the Gun Training DVD, 3 days of shooting, and 3 weeks of editing, and it was off to the printer. And, like, not just editing, but, like, writing the copy for it, making the one-sheet promo, you know, doing the cover, making the cover... Making the layout files, you know, I've learned to do all that. I don't do it as well as like, you know, like the Muslim agorist, Davi. You know, he's an expert with like page layout and Photoshop and stuff. Like, you know, I could have paid him some money to do the cover and it would have been 30% better. But I didn't have the money for it. I didn't feel like doing it. So I just did it myself and it's pretty good, but it's not great.
Why not? Why not?
Have you seen that movie?
I'm totally of that philosophy. I do the same stuff. And if I don't know how to do something, but I feel my art requires it, all I do is go to YouTube and type it in. And somebody else is showing me literally step by step how to do it. Especially in a world where software can do pretty much anything that an artist used to do. If you program it correctly and tell it to do the right things. Just go to YouTube. Figure it out, man. It's not
hard. Have you seen the Gun Training DVD yet?
It's literally on my DVD player waiting to be watched.
You know, I was going to say...
I've been busy. I got my little part-time job, and I was like, yeah, it's just going to be part-time for now. But we would like a lot of money this month, so I'm working 6 days this week.
Yeah, so give us donations, or the fiends live and die with you.
Right, that's obviously a joke. I don't care. It's at night, and I enjoy doing it, so...
If we don't get $60, if we don't get $60 in the next hour, I'm throwing all the I'm taking all the equipment out and throwing it in the trash. It's trash day, and I'm just going to throw it all away.
Yeah. You know, I think micro donations might be a good way to go too. If every fiend wants to give us $1 a month, that would be great. Not like we're charging you for it, but hey, $1 literally. If you listen to the fiends, you know, every episode or once a week, think of it as a gumball you get in the machine as you walk outside of the grocery store.
And that would be like $5,000-$6,000 a month, which would we could quit our day jobs. But what's more reasonable, and I would really appreciate. I'd like it if people did that, but I mean, we do have a thing that's set up for a $3 minimum donation a month automatically. You can do that, but what I would really like is if some people did that and other people just went and reviewed us everywhere they could, iTunes, Amazon, blogs, etc., and started torrenting us, because the torrenting is more important. You know, we don't live or die with the donations, but there may come a time where what we're doing is shut down. Even though it's legal now, technically, and it's technically covered by the First Amendment of the United States Constitution, that thing is out the window, man. And it's just a matter of time before they start going door to door, not for guns, but for free speech or both. And when we are droned, you know, when we're thrown in some camp or even just like stopped with an injunction of like, you're going to go to prison if you keep doing this, or we're going to, you know, take your house or whatever. If we stop doing it, if everybody has already downloaded it on BitTorrent, even if they're not sharing it yet, if they have it in their BitTorrent, they can just flip a switch. They could just all turn on BitTorrent when that happens, and it will not go away.
Yep. It's a wonderful thing. Yeah. Although I would not stop if they gave me an injunction. You would have to
you don't have a
my
house
mouth shut
you don't
to
have
get
a house
me to stop
yet.
Talking. I don't have a house, and I'm younger, and I understand that, and that's fine if you would. I mean, I don't blame anybody for wanting to stop in those cases. And I am a real laid-back person, except when somebody is aggressing on me from authority, you know. Stepdads, teachers, cops telling
judges.
Me to not throw snowballs, get snowballs in their faces. It's like a switch gets flipped in me, and I go into like this Hulk smash mode. If they put an injunction on, I would probably podcast every day. I'd be like, whatever.
And I'm not saying the way to me is through my house. If you threaten to take my house, I'll stop. I'll do whatever you want. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying my stakes are probably bigger, but no, man, my wife is so adamant about free speech and being able to do what people should be able to do. She'd join me on the fight, you know.
Yeah.
She'd put up the house to hire the lawyers to fight. and I would not hire Mark Stevens.
I'd hire Garrett. Go there.
I'd hire Garrett.
Like, I didn't have enough beef in this cast. Today.
I know. Well, I'm on a diet, man. I'm on a diet. When you're on a diet, your body effing hates you, and I want beef. No, I would hire Gary Spence. You know who he is?
You're on an all beef diet. What are you talking about?
Do you know who Gary Spence is?
No. I know who Gary Sinise is.
No, Gary Spence is he's in Jackson, Wyoming. He's like incredibly famous for, let's see, American trial lawyer, widely recognized as one of the greatest trial lawyers of all time, member of the American Trial Lawyers Hall of Fame. He states that he has never lost a criminal case either as a prosecutor or defense attorney, and he's not lost a civil case since 1969. And actually, wow. He's semi-retired, and he's more wealthy than God, but he's in Wyoming, and he's very much, I would call him if I was in a case of like First Amendment crap. You know, I think he'd, I don't know if he'd take it free, but I think he'd look at it and talk to, and, you know, it's like my wife's a paralegal for a lawyer. You know, most people calling Gary Spence would get put through to a bunch of people, but if I hired my wife's law firm, you know, she could call on behalf and say, hey, I'm calling from the law firm of blah, blah, blah. And she could actually get him on the phone. So,
yeah. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, yeah. Are we done with Voluntarius?
He did the Karen Silkwood case, man. You know who Karen Silkwood is?
No.
They made a movie about her, man. What's it called? It's called Silkwood. She was like finding the dirt about some nuclear power plant, you know, doing things that were incredibly dangerous to people. And she got like run off the road and murdered by their thugs or by somebody's thugs. And then Gary Spence handled the case. That's the kind of stuff he takes.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
He's a muckety muck.
And he says, at one point he saw, you know, in 1952, he started his career in Riverton, Wyoming, and became a successful defense attorney for the insurance industry. Years later, Spence said he saw the light and became committed to representing people instead of corporations, insurance companies, banks, or big business. All right, so I'm going to just say right now, Gary Spence is going to be my attorney. I'm going to try to get Gary Spence to be my attorney.
You've got him on imagination retainer.
He's in Wyoming. I do. I have him on imagination. You got to see a picture of him, man. He's like... cowboy.
Does he look like a lawyer?
He looks like a cowboy lawyer.
Oh. He looks like Matt Mead's campaign photos.
No, he's older and more genuinely rugged. Okay. He's probably sued Matt Mead. I don't know. He seems like he would have.
Screw Matt Mead. Gary Spence.
I didn't say it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did. What you gonna do? What you gonna do, Matt Mead?
Yeah. Yeah. He wrote a book. It's called The Making of a Country Lawyer.
Oh, okay.
He's got a cowboy hat.
Is he the one who invented that phrase? Nah, I'm just a simple country lawyer.
I'm just a simple country lawyer. Probably. Probably. That's funny. Country lawyer. Let's look that up. Yeah. Yeah,
from
man.
From freedom to slavery.
My imaginary lawyer can beat up your injunction.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I see him. He's got fringes on his jacket.
Yeah, he's got a buckskin jacket with fringes and a cowboy hat, and he looks like he could kick your ass. And he's like 70.
He's 83, man.
He's 83.
Wow.
Wow.
That's old. That's old, but not too old, man. You can be old and still cool. It can happen. It's possible. I'll grant it.
He did lose. I'll allow it, but keep it tight. He did lose one criminal case, but prevailed upon appeal.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So kind of like a spare instead of a strike.
But not an asterisk.
No. No.
Yeah.
So how long till the next time we have to sell stuff? Do we want to sell stuff now, or do you want to run through? Because I've got something that you wanted to talk about. But
skeet, skeet, skeet. Who will build the loads? That's what Topher said.
Oh, Topher. That's great.
I love it. Skeet, skeet. He's like, I never heard that term. Skeet. Thanks for turning me on to it. Skeet, skeet, skeet. Who will build the loads?
I thought that was like a club standard. If you've been to any club ever, they play the Little John song where he goes, till we all skeet, skeet, motherfucker.
I don't know. Let's go sell some stuff.
Skeet, skeet, skeet.
Let's go sell some Little John records.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
Have you swallowed too much of the state's poison? The Freedom Fiends will stick their fingers down your throat and hold your hair back while you hurl. Check out the new show, The Freedom Fiends Agenda, on Adam Curry's No Agenda Global Radio, streaming live every Thursday from 3:30 to 5:30 p.m. East Coast U.S. time. Listen live at nagradio.com. That's nagradio.com. Call in soon before they get droned.
Yeah, this is the last one here, last one of this episode. There is a small chance this one's going to get interrupted by men coming to my door.
Ooh, what kind of men? Men in hats?
Plumbers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we actually need to spend like between $7,000 and $10,000 and have them dig up the concrete in the back patio and fix the pipe going out to the city sewage pipe. So until we have the money to do that...
Are you sure? Maybe it's the central poopinizer.
No, it's absolutely that.
We've been having problems too. Our sink was backflowing. Like the sink, our kitchen sink would be empty, and then the next morning, both sinks were completely full. Like water was going backwards.
Yeah, we got that in the basement, but it's not just water. It's kind of dark colored. Let's just leave it at that. yeah, basically what it's is with water. These old houses, they actually made the sewage pipe out of tar paper before PVC plastic. And it worked pretty well. It was like layers and layers of it. It's like, you know, half an inch thick of tar paper.
But it's past its lifetime.
So about once a year, we have to get the plumbers to come root out. It's not roto-rooter, but it does what they do. They come and like get up on the roof and snake it out, you know, with a snake that has a camera on it so they can see, you know, 100 feet away where the blockage is. So I'm glad we're getting it done right now because the snow thawed. It's above freezing right now. It's a bitch. We had them last year come like...
It's like a colonoscopy for your house.
It is. We had them come last year like in the winter up on... I felt sorry for them. They're up on the roof in the snow, in the wind, in the cold. Like, yeah.
That's a shitty day.
So, yeah. They're coming between 2 and 4. So, I don't know when that is. We'll see. Okay. It's almost 2. So, yeah. You want to talk about something. What is it? IP horror and the Supreme Court?
Yeah, man. You sent this to me. I didn't realize what it was at first. But apparently, the Supreme Court's hearing a case that could change the way you resell things. So we always talk about IP with regard, usually on this cast,
to original sale.
Well, also to media. To media, you basically own it and what you do with it at this point. But according to the article, and they did put this really simply, I'm going to just quote the article's 2 paragraphs to sum up what's going on here. They say, put simply, though Apple has the copyright on the iPhone and Mark Owen does own the copyright on the book No Easy Day, you can still sell your copies to whomever you please, whenever you want, without retribution. That's being challenged now for products that are made abroad. If the Supreme Court upholds an appellate court ruling, it would mean that the copyright holders of anything you own that has been made in China, Japan, Europe, you'd have to get permission from the original makers in order to sell it.
This would end flea markets. It would end library, you know, book sales. It would, well, they'd probably have an exception because they're the government, but it would end, it would put the few remaining mom and pop used bookstores out of, you know, it would screw everything.
Pawn shops. I mean, Craigslist, eBay.
Yeah. And there was something.
Especially with music gear. I mean, think of where music gear is built. It's probably mostly built in China.
It all has patents. It all has trademarks. This only mentioned copyright, but I'm assuming it also covers patents and trademarks. I mean, because there's not really a copyright on an iPhone. There's a bunch of patents. There's probably copyrights on some of the software. But
and if not, then it's just a small step to take the next step. And yeah, I mean, when we talk about IP, that's one of the things is once you own something, nobody can tell you what to do with it. For instance, if I buy a CD, I now own that CD. I can do anything I want with it. Nobody else has a claim on it if I bought it outright, right? I mean, yeah. It's in my possession. I own it. So this not only flies in the face of that, but it takes it a step further, saying that, yeah, if you ever try to sell it, you don't have the right to do that unless you pay some sort of remittance to these people.
And basically,
how would they enforce that without, like, shutting down
high profile busts of flea markets and used bookstores and then chilling effect? Yeah. And this is being decided by the Supreme Court, and it's one of those things that, like, nobody knew about, and it's kind of under the, you know, they're trying to do it so you don't know about it. And
I also thought what actually made the case happen, like the reason the case is in the Supreme Court, I thought it was a beautiful example of free enterprise making items cheaper for consumers. And of course, the state, the corporate state, trying to stop that. So the case stemmed from a guy, I guess his name is Supap Kurtsang. I'm sure I'm pronouncing that incorrectly. He's from Thailand, and he came to America in 97. He was studying at Cornell University, and he realized that his textbooks were so much cheaper to buy in Thailand than they were in New York. So he got all his relatives to Thailand to buy the cheap books, shipped them to him, and then he sold them, making tons of money for himself and also providing a service to people, right? All these people that he sold the books to, they had more money to spend on food or clothes or college tuition. There was more opportunity cost. There was less money wasted on things like trade agreements and protectionist schemes that the state does. So the world was actually made wealthier by him doing this free market activity. And this is also a great example to tell stinky liberals about how the free market helps poor people by making goods cheaper, right?
Stinky liberals.
Well, it's true, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
The company is complaining because the company lost money, but the company was screwing people over by charging them too much money. This guy, who's just some college kid, through the profit motive, because it would make him money, realized a way to make a good cheaper for people. That's how prices go down.
Yeah, and you know, really what this is applying a government model to copyright, even more so than already, because, I mean, think about originally taxes in America. I mean, I don't like any taxes, but they have changed for the worst by far over the years. When they originally started, the only taxes were on corporations and individuals were not taxed. Then they added an income, which is basically constitutional. And then they unconstitutionally added an income tax. And then states added sales taxes. And now everything is taxed at every level, where originally it was only taxed originally. You know, like you buy something from the original manufacturer or from the original retailer and you pay a tax. The corporation makes money and you pay tax on it. Now, think about how money is taxed at every point. You know, if I buy a guitar effects pedal from you that you bought, you know, you're the fourth owner on it, you're still supposed to pay income tax on that sale, or sales tax.
Tax. Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess you are, but that's...
You're taxed every time money changes hands, you're technically supposed to pay for it.
And think about how that raises the cost of goods and the cost of doing business, because you're paying all of that. I mean, I don't know what the numbers are, but I wouldn't be surprised if 40% to half of the costs of any good are taxes at various levels. Also, or minimum wage, you know, tax, various government intrusions that have added to the cost of goods.
And, you know, it's really funny how stinky liberals and stinky conservatives, or well-bathed conservatives, think that raising taxes to pay for all of the things they want to do good is good, and they feel like someone else is going to pay for it. The poorest people in America pay tax all the time, even if they've never filled out a tax form. You know, you buy a candy bar, you're paying sales tax, but you're also paying the tax on the trucking company that brought it, the store that sells it, the company that made it, the company that sold each of the ingredients to that company, a dozen other things along the way, man. You're paying the tax on the electricity in the store you bought it from. Mm-hmm. You're paying when you take the bus to go there, you're paying your bus price includes the city bus price includes taxes on gasoline, you know, for the bus, everything.
they're like the most efficient mafia operation you could think of. They literally, without question, get a cut of everything
without
every
you even,
transaction.
Without you knowing noticing. It.
Yeah.
When you know, renters are like, well, landlords should pay taxes and homeowners should pay taxes, but not renters, and I'm glad we don't. You pay taxes. Your rent includes taxes. Your rent includes the property, you know, a share of the property tax.
Well as all the licensing they had to do to get people to come inspect the property and the building codes and the pool license for the people who came out and checked out the pool and the hot tub.
And the, you know, the salary of the bureaucrat who studied satellite photos to find out who had a pool so they could tax him the pool tax, which we talked about before. And, you know, sometimes we say things like in passing and you're like, yeah, that doesn't really happen. Like you said, or people will say that, or I'll say it. Like you said, you know, in that ad, we say, like, for the VPN, we say, do you want to surf porn in private or just be able to look at what you want to without some tech goon hired off a pizza box? And you're like, what the hell is that? Did you make that up, Michael? That's funny. And I'm like, no, the TSA is hiring people off of, and DHS are hiring people off of ads on pizza boxes now. You'll probably see some and deliver some. Have you started that job yet?
I did, yeah, last night, and I had a blast, man. They say you can't go home, but it felt like home.
Nice.
I did it, you know, 4 years in college, same place, same locale. I still remembered the whole delivery area. Like, I barely had to look at a map. I would get an address, and I would know in my mind exactly
like
where
that
address was.
Falling off a bicycle. I could probably go be a bike messenger in San Francisco now. You know, 18 years later and do the same thing.
And still
thing.
Remember where the addresses are.
Although I'd be huffing and puffing more than I was back then.
Yeah.
What does it say on the pizza box? Is on your pizza box, is it a TSA ad?
Hell no.
Is it like in Futurama where it has the Italian guy smiling?
Don't tip the driver. Oh, no. Luckily, it does not. No, man. Tips at this location are really good. I worked 4 hours yesterday, and I made $40 in tips alone, and then you get $13. I got $13 for gas, in addition to minimum wage. So if you just count my tips, it was $10 an hour. Plus, I get $7 an hour for minimum wage, and like a buck something for every run I take for gas. So it's $17 an hour for 4 hours, and that's average. So. It's a decent way to work at night, not interfere with the fiends, and make money for new turntables and a camera and audio equipment to make the fiends better and to make my art easier to produce.
So before we go into talking about how Facebook is trying to shut down the fiends, we have a correction. Someone wrote in, for your information, I'm listening to the Thursday Fiend Show, RBN. We were talking about that radio station getting shut down. Sovereign citizen stuff.
We're getting our info from Wikipedia as we often do.
And they said RBN is a decent station. That whole sovereign citizen stuff was on the wiki, intentionally skewed to make RBN look bad. Sam Kennedy was a host on RBN that teamed up with Tim Turner, who I believe is a Fed snitch. That's what someone sent me.
You know, I can believe that. I remember when I interviewed Larkin Rose, and I was like, asking him about something, and I was like, yeah, I got that from your wiki page. And he's like, yeah, the wiki page is wrong because people hate me.
Yeah.
I could definitely see that. I'm glad you included that comment. I'm not sure if I'm going to go do any kind of independent research on RBN because I don't feel like it affects me that much. But duly noted. Thank you.
And you know, you're nobody until somebody wants to censor you, which leads to our Wikipedia or our Facebook thing recently. Somebody posted a link to our video. It was Freedom of Ingestion, which is me playing music and you rapping about how the government should stay out of your weed and your guns. And
it's
waving
when
around.
You taught me what a Mixolydian mode was, and I learned that.
It's the one mode that's different going up than down. And Dick Dale uses a lot of Mixolydian modes.
I could see that. Yep,
they sound Middle
Eastern. They sound ancient.
Yeah. Yep. So So when I clicked on this link, Facebook gave me a security alert that said, the link you're trying to visit, and this link was YouTube, which YouTube you can click with impunity. A real YouTube link is never going to be viral or mess with you up.
Because it's YouTube. Right. I mean, it's like number two Google rank. Google owns it, and it's Alexa ranking is like three or something.
Maybe this is Facebook trying to F with the competition. But no, I think it's a bunch of people or several people complained and marked it viral when it, you know, like a virus viral when it wasn't, to try to censor us. Because you get a security alert when you click on that link on Facebook that says, you know, it's got a big like exclamation point and a triangle. Security alert. The link you are trying to visit has been classified as potentially abusive by a Facebook partner. To learn more about staying safe on the internet, visit Facebook's security page. Please also read the Wikipedia articles on malware and phishing. And then there's a McAfee logo, McAfee antivirus, and it says, to stay safe outside of Facebook, get the free McAfee Site Advisor plugin. So
they're spamming you.
They're spamming
spam.
You. Yeah, they're trying to scare you with something that's not scary, telling you you need their product to buy their product.
Ugh, ridiculous, man. Well, you know, the video is abusive. It's abusive towards the state.
Abuse. It's abusive towards abuse, man.
Abusive towards abuse. Yeah, that's a good
way to put it. It's self-defense. It's abusive self. It's a self-defense at abuse.
Yes, yes. And it's a wonderful video. I do encourage you to check it out. If you didn't get to click on it because Facebook was being a butt, just go check it out. Google or YouTube, freedom of ingestion. It's the concept of, you know, you have the right to decide what goes into your frickin' body. And if the founding fathers could have foreseen, I don't think they even imagined something as tyrannical as a drug war, something as tyrannical as the government deciding what goes in your body. They never could have envisioned that level of government.
I mean, I think it would violate a bunch of the amendments of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, including one that's not talked about much, which is quartering soldiers. I mean, they're not being quartered in houses, but they're basically on full-time salary being quartered in the community.
I never thought of that.
In a way that the founders never wanted a standing army or a standing police force.
But they call it a drug war, and the police force the police force is the one who fights this drug war, and they live in your town. You pay for their housing,
so you're quartering them.
You're right. That's great. I love that.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate it, but I love that connection that you made.
Thanks, man. Thanks.
Yeah, man. Yeah,
thanks.
We should use that more. Which amendment is the quartering of soldiers? Is it the fourth?
I don't know, but quartering.
We're not really constant. We don't really, you know.
I learned all that, and I've had to forget it all.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean,
it was actually
the Bill of Rights. It's like, oh, that's cute. Now here's real freedom.
It's the Third Amendment, man. It's that important. The Third Amendment. Like free speech, guns, and no quartering of soldiers. And actually, there's a Onion piece that I think it's a video that I think was making fun of Second Amendment people, that it was an interview with someone from, it was a lobbyist group in DC that was supposed to be protecting the Third Amendment. And it was like, well, no one's quartering soldiers yet, but they could happen anytime. And it was supposed to be like ridiculous, but I'm like, I think it could happen.
I think you're right. No, I say
I think it is happening.
I think it is happening. I think we should pimp that more. We should, because that helps people to understand what's going on with police forces now and what's going on with the drug war. Let's be Third Amendment advocates for a little bit. Let's put on our little constitutionalist hats and let's explain to people that, hey, if you're a constitutionalist, the cops are basically quartered soldiers.
I think that might be a better title for this. The cops are the drug war violates the Third. I don't know. I'll figure it out, but or put it in there somehow. But yeah, that is something to point out. I mean, you're quartering them with your tax money and your property tax or your rental, part of your rental money, whatever. You're quartering them as your neighbors. And quartering, if you don't know, is a kind of slightly archaic term that means having to allow them in your home. You know, that was one thing that the founders hated about the king, was that in England and in America, you know, since they didn't have barracks or they didn't have, you know, place to put the soldiers, they'd put them in your home. Soldiers could knock on your door and say, hey, I need your spare room, a meal, and maybe your daughter. Literally, I'm not kidding.
Yep.
And,
Well, It's like in RPGs, you know, role-playing games on video game systems, how you're usually a soldier in some medieval time, and you just walk into people's houses and talk to them and, like, steal out of their cabinets, and that's just the norm.
Yeah.
So maybe that's where it stems from.
Yeah. Whereas, you know, when there's a resistance army, people who support the resistance will often quarter people voluntarily. Although then, kill them? You know, no, not kill them. No, let them.
Quarter the rebel army.
Yeah, voluntarily. Yeah. Oh, gotcha. Well, I mean, that happened in the American Revolution, and that happens all over the world. But, you know, you also risk, like, treason charges and being hanged for giving aid and comfort to the enemy. I think that the government is giving aid and comfort to the enemy by stealing our money and quartering this occupation army of, you know, Fed goon drug warriors.
Yeah, I think you're right. But I think the government is also the enemy. So to them, they obviously don't see it that way.
They're really unpleasant. I'll say that.
They're really unpleasant. Okay, you're trying to be diplomatic there.
So we're about out here. I have this funny thing that kept coming to my mind the other day. Was like, I have this image of some band rocking out in the studio, and then the producer walks in and he's looking at his iPhone or his BlackBerry, and he goes, stop. Okay, sorry, your style of music just now went passe. Thank you for your help, but please go back to your old jobs now. Why yeah, can't we do that with the occupation army too?
Ah, there you go. Yeah. We're sick of paying traffic tickets and being thrown in cages and beaten up and tased, and sick of worrying about being droned. So why don't you guys just go get productive
well,
work?
You know, I often go back to that at a Grateful Dead show in the parking lot. Some white hippie getting arrested for selling weed.
Oh,
dragged
and the Jamaican
off
guy
cops,
just shaming
and
the cops.
And the Jamaican shot guy following the tall, big, imposing, dreadlocked Jamaican dude in tie-dye screaming at the cops and saying, like, hey, man, why don't you stop doing what you're doing? You come down to my office Monday morning. I give you honest work selling incense. Honest work selling incense. I can't do the accent, but
That's wonderful. Yeah. That's wonderful. I love how he used that term, honest work, too, because I don't know if I can think of a more dishonest, on its face, profession than police work. I mean, literally, they're taught to lie to people so they can get them to incriminate themselves.
Specifically, drug police work. I mean, I'm not going to make a case for cops or do some good, but it's like, okay, some cops occasionally do something good. Drug cops never do anything good. Mm-hmm. Their whole thing is based on theft, fraud, aggression, murder, you know, kidnapping, you know.
Yeah.
And they make TV shows about it now. You know what? I bashed how there's all these new shows out that are cop shows. And I was talking about, oh, the God, there's even one called Homeland now about Homeland Security. Mm. It's really good. It's a really good TV show, man. I hate it.
It's good because it's critical of Homeland Security.
No,
or it's good because it's
good drama, man. It's well written, well acted. Okay. And it stars Claire Danes. Who was, you know, I've liked her since My So-Called Life.
I hate her.
She's good. She plays a scared, crazed woman really well, and she does that in this as a Homeland Security agent.
Yeah. I never liked her.
Yeah. I mean, the episode I saw took place, like, you know, following Hezbollah and shooting them in...
Really? Was Hezbollah in America? I hope not.
No, not in America. Okay. No. They were in Beirut.
Damn tourists.
They were in Lebanon, which, you know, when I think of Lebanon, I think of Dick Dale. I don't want to think of bad things happening.
There you go. You should tell that to Dick Dale. When I think of Lebanon, I think of you.
I think
Israel,
I'm
killing a bunch of
here's
kids.
How I want to segue into politics with Dick Dale. He's half Lebanese and half Russian. And I want to be like, you know, you are basically of the two parts of the world that America has hated. You know, they hated Russia in the 60s and 70s and now they hate the Middle East. You know, what would you do?
Is he a Christian Lebanese person? Because Lebanon has a lot of Christians, too.
I don't know what his religion is. I'm going to ask him that, too. I'm guessing it's kind of some kind of hippie spiritualist surfer thing. But and he did surf, unlike the Beach Boys, who just pretended to. Or most of them did. But he also says he doesn't surf now because there's too much mercury in the water worldwide. He says he's going to start snowboarding. But I want to ask him what he thinks could make peace in the Mideast, because I think that'd be a good question.
Yeah.
And you know, the picture on Wikipedia of him performing is in a performing at a club called the Middle East Restaurant.
Here's
in
the deal.
Cambridge. In the Middle East, I've played in the Middle East Restaurant. I tried to hit the drummer from the band Pavement in the head with my bass at that show.
That's
and
not
my sister
nice
was
you.
There, and my sister was like horrified. Like, this is what you do? But
you
we were
people
we were,
with your guitar.
The guy was drunk. We opened for him, and he was really drunk. And he tried to come up on stage and start playing my drummer's drums while we were playing. Like, you know, grabbed cymbals, like grabbed sticks, and started hitting on his cymbals off beat.
So you had to pull an Adam Kokesh.
Well, I pushed him away, and he came back. Yeah, I swung a bass guitar at him that would have put him in the hospital if it hit him, but he kind of swerved. He staggered out of the way accidentally before it hit him.
Did he stop? Did he get the message?
Yeah, one of his band members, my friend Rob Chamberlain, who played in Pavement, kind of led him off to the stage, and I think bought him another beer. And then they played, and they were really bad because their drummer was really drunk.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's probably a bell curve when it comes to drummers and intoxicants.
Well,
you're probably better if you've got a few in you, but you're probably a lot worse if you've got too many.
It's a thin line. It's a thin line. As David Lee Roth said, man, you got to craft your buzz. And on that note,
craft your buzz.
Dick Dale is a big influence on Eddie Van Halen. Eddie Van Halen has said that.
Yeah. I asked this Dick Dale if the Middle East crisis would be solved by having everybody do rap battles or guitar playing.
Well, you know, I actually asked Hubert Selby that. You know, like what would kind of
friendly competition for the Gaza Strip?
What could there be for world peace? You know, and I loved Selby's answer. He said, you know, I don't know about all these politicians having talks and stuff. I think it's like. You know, I think what ended the Cold War was just a couple of dancers going back and forth between Moscow and New York.
Yeah.
Because they had that ballet exchange during the Cold War, you know? All right. On that note, I think we're out.
Out. And peace.
Worms.
Hello, freedom fiends. It's your boy, Dean. From the U.S., get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I owe me and that include endorphins. No, I won't ask permission and I won't say please. Freedom fans, one fact that I gotta make clear.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Every week, we'll have an exciting new episode where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi weave their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com, the Liberty Radio Network, and No Agenda Global Radio.
Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them. We're not saying the Freedom Fiends are the one true path to anarchist liberation, but it's a good one. If you want to put your voluntarist money where your mouth is, consider making a donation to the Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post. Then make a one-time gift via PayPal or set up a monthly contribution of as little as $3. Giving to the Freedom Fiends helps advance education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. The Freedom Fiends. We work hard, so send us some money.